This is Evan Murray. This is Music Industry Insights. Thank you for tuning into this podcast. Today is a big one. Why do I say it's a big one? Well, when it comes to big, you don't get much bigger than Canadian Music Week. Canadian Music Week is decades old, and it is also one of the most established and premier and biggest and recognized showcase conference festivals in the world, easily. It is the biggest and most prestigious in Canada by far. Neil Dixon is the person I am talking with in this podcast, the person I'm interviewing, and he was no stranger to the music industry before the inception of Canadian Music Week. Neil has managed famous acts, famous international acts. Neil is, his DNA is the music industry. His DNA is rock and roll and everything inside of the Canadian music industry. He's the president of Canadian Music Week. Sorry, his daughter is the CEO. And he is also the president of CAMA, Canadian Association for the Advancement of Music and Arts. And he's also, they run a marijuana conference in Toronto as well. So this guy is like Captain Conference, and he's like, you know, the Canadian grandfather of the music industry. And I mean that with all the most sincere respect. Because Neil Dixon is at the epicenter of all things music related in Canada. So this was a really big deal for me to, you know, be able to sit with Neil for like an hour and just talk to him about his career and talk to him about Canadian Music Week and all of the other things he does. I mean, it's just an awesome amount of information. So again, like following these Canadian podcasts, I did one with a Music Industry Association executive director. I did one with three Canadian artists who are surviving and maintaining a living in Canada, talking about how to develop your band, how to tour in Canada, what kind of assets you need in Canada. I talked to funding people in Canada at SOCAN. They're also the people that do the licensing and, you know, the copyright claims in Canada. And now the biggest, baddest, best, greatest grandfather of the Canadian music industry. This is Neil Dixon. I want you to check this out. I want you to listen to it. I want you to hear what he's saying, hear what he's done. I want you to extract the information and enjoy it.
Today, I have a very special guest coming all the way from Toronto, Canada. It's CEO of Canadian Music Week. Neil Dixon. Neil, thanks a lot for joining me today. And I'm just, please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background.
Okay. Well, we got to correct one thing right off the bat, and that's, I'm not the CEO. Danny Dixon is the CEO.
Okay.
Danny is my daughter.
Oh,
okay. I'm the president of CMW. So, but you've got one of the two leaders, so okay. That's good. Okay.
Where's the boss? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
All right.
Next year, 2022, will be our 40th year in business. So it's quite an anniversary for Canadian Music Week.
Wow, that is. That's incredible. So have you been there since the beginning?
Yeah, I started it.
You started it. So you started the Canadian Music Week 40 years ago this coming year.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, that's incredible. Congratulations. I mean, I honestly knew it was like one of the longest running conference showcases, but I didn't know it was up at 40. I didn't know that. So that's incredible. So how did that idea come? Like, where did that come from? Were you attending other one? Was there other ones?
Well, back in those days, there were very few, as you can imagine. And before I did before I got into the conference business, I had a record label called Solid Gold Records. And it was very successful in Canada. We had 27 gold and platinum albums. It ran for about, 5 years, I guess. And when I was doing the record label, obviously, we spent a lot of time in the U.S. trying to hype our product. So we would go to industry trade events. There wasn't, there was a New York music seminar that was sort of around in those days, but they didn't last. They lasted a long time, but they disappeared. What else was around in those days? It was radio and records. They didn't last. They've gone out of business. Right. So basically, all the sort of major events of that era, or a lot of them, that sort of were the precursors to today's showcase festivals, have gone by the wayside. Now, the next longest running one that we've attended quite regularly, of course, was South by Southwest. But that came after we started.
Wow. Okay. So, I didn't even know that either. Wow.
Yeah.
So you guys are actually further, like you guys have a more established, I mean, a longer.
Yeah. We're like the granddaddy of music events.
Wow.
So my daughter wasn't even born when we started. And now she's CEO. So.
Thanks, Dad. So,
there you go.
Yeah.
So, so that just kind of gives you a little bit of sort of depth. And at the beginning, I did have partners. We partnered with a trade paper in Canada called The Record. And The Record is sort of morphed into FYI in Canada. And you're familiar probably with that website and news organization here now. That's owned by Gary Slate. So, but back in those days, the publication was independent. It was called The Record. There was another one called RPM, which was a competitor. RPM actually had a music conference and trade show as well as awards. Again, they've fell by the wayside as well. So there's been a lot of, it's not a unique idea, but it was something that we sort of took a bit from everybody's, agenda and sort of cobbled it together and came up with something that was better, you know? Mm-hmm. So longevity, obviously when you talk about all the people that have been and gone, is important. So, I think our secret to longevity is we've sort of morphed with the times. We have not sort of got too retro and stayed still, but at the same time, I mean, there's a lot of tradition to it, but we've always been early on new companies, new entrepreneurs in tech. So even from the early days. So I think that's been important to our success and developing. I mean, when you've been around that long, a lot of artists that started showcasing have come back and played the festival as headliners. So that's, that's another sort of benefit of longevity. But it's a significant year next year, and I'm glad COVID is almost over. I don't think it is almost over. I mean, we've been talking about when are we going to get back to in-person live, and we felt 22 was going to be the year, but with all these outbreaks around the world and people putting new lockdowns and new variants popping up and, you know, sort of some vaccine hesitation with part of the population. It's going to take a little longer than I thought. I think our next edition will probably be still a hybrid. So we're looking at it like it's going to be live, but we're planning on it that it's going to be hybrid. So and the dates for next year, tentatively right now, the first week of June. Normally we're in May, last week of May, or we're trying to avoid significant things like Memorial Day and the May 2-4 weekend, which is a big sort of unofficial start of summer for Canadians. That's Queen Victoria's birthday. That's usually around the 24th. So those are bad weekends to do events, we found. So, and because everybody's been canceling their events, there's sort of a stacked up, it's like planes flying around LaGuardia and they can't land. They're all going to be landing in 2022 in the spring and the summer. So I think it'll be a busy time, but I do think that for our purpose, sort of the virtual is still going to be a very sort of major component of it. And I wouldn't have said that 6 months ago, but after our virtual conference that we did this May, we were really pleased with it. And we were pleased with the sort of attendance and the international scope of it. I mean, it made it easier for people to attend Canadian Music Week that either don't have the time or the resources or their schedule. So, you know, they're busy. So, but I think we managed to get some higher caliber people because of the nature of the it being a virtual event. So that was a positive. So it wasn't lost on us. We'll try and keep that and make it as international as possible now because of the ability to, you know, run virtual events. So,
yeah, I mean, I obviously, like, if people don't know it, I mean, Canadian Music Week is Canada's premier showcase conference. Like when I was on there, it was incredibly impressive, the online version, and your guests were incredibly impressive. I watched Economic and Trade Commission people from Canada having full-blown conversations, or, you know, from Canada in other countries, like the trade commissioner for Netherlands, and, like, you know, in Taiwan, and, you know, all around, you know, different parts of the world. So, I mean, it's super significant. Plus, you have a celebrity aspect to your conference as well. Like, you have major, major stars, you know, people that have done mega things. When did all that start? Like, did you start it out that way where you're like, hey, you know, like, I want to focus on, like, you know, of course, like, you know, your business aspect, right? So you want to meet people that you're doing business with. But did you also think, like, yeah, I also want a star element to this, and also something where, like, independent people can, like, you know, be inspired and to get opportunities? Like, how did that kind of shape for you? How did that form? Because what it is now, it's like a mega event. If you got, like, top government people, like the Trade Minister of Canada, the top ones talked in it too. He gave an address. So how did that evolve? You
know? Okay, well, that's what it did. It actually evolved. It started, and because our partner was a trade paper, it started as being an annual get together for their readership. In other words,
very interesting.
Yeah, so it was based around at the beginning. It was heavily based around radio because this was a radio tip sheet in Canada. So that it was called the record. So it was radio and records, but it was very heavy on radio. So it started off always had a very solid radio component. As it developed, you know, obviously more and more labels wanted to showcase their artists in front of radio. So we gave them opportunities, but it stayed as a conference for the first, I don't know, 6-7 years before we added a festival. So the festival component was very small at the beginning. It just was one room. It was a place for everybody to go to at night and hang out. And then eventually, as it got more and more popular, we had to add other venues and accommodate. And again, originally it was domestic. So it started off as a Canadian conference for Canadians, if you will. Mm. Although, because we had the record company experience, we had a lot of friends in the U.S., so I could rely, pick up the phone and rely on getting some U.S. guests come up, and both in radio and records, to, you know, make appearances in those early days. But I think it really sort of got on the radar when it became a festival and the public got to attend. So before then, it was a trade event and pretty much ignored by the media. And for the first, well, for 14 years, we strategically decided to tie ourselves in with the Juno Awards.
Wow.
So, and the Juno Awards weren't traveling around the country at that time. They were permanently in Toronto. So we did the festival and conference. They did the big award show, and it was actually quite a successful, you know, endeavor. And that kind of changed in, I guess it was 1991. They moved out to Vancouver, the Junos did. Mm. So of course we went with them. And
okay.
Now what happened there was, we had gone from having sort of the major annual conference to the point where record companies were not sending all their staff to Vancouver. They're only sending senior staff. You know what I mean? So that was an experiment where we dropped, I think, $250,000 in losses on that show.
Wow.
So that was a huge learning curve.
It was, and that, like, was 14 years into it, right? Like, that was already...
And the Junos was quite successful because they, of course, have got money from the city, money from the province, money from the feds. So for them to travel, it made sense. We didn't qualify for all that sort of subsidies and back in those days. So at that point, we said, okay, we're going to retreat, rebuild, and pay off our debts and make it a Toronto-based event. And we weren't going to move now. It was like, you know. So that sort of was the reason it split up with the Junos. And of course, the Junos vetted a festival and a small conference where but they worked with local cities and let them run that, which I think is a great idea. So, I mean, I think ultimately it worked out best for both, because we were always overshadowed by the Junos and the media. You would never see a story about Canadian Music Week. You'd see a story about the Junos, you know, so... And then since then, you know, us getting sponsors and us getting recognition, and it was a lot easier when we were our own identity and we weren't, you know, hitched onto somebody else's wagon. So that's sort of that lesson. I mean, when it worked, it worked. But then when it didn't work, it really didn't work. So, and that just happened to be, at that point, it was, you know, a business decision, and it was, it wasn't a reactionary, it was just a case of, it just had to be done. So, so from then, it's always been a sort of a standalone event. So, and we've put a lot more emphasis now on the indies and the artists. Of course, my label that I had was an independent label. And so that's my roots. So so we wanted to build up that festival to be a showcase for independent artists. The multinationals have always participated. And a lot of the artists that started as independents ended up on multinational labels. So that was sort of the pecking order back then. Now, I mean, the same thing's happening now, but the artists have even more independence and can make a lot better sort of even P&D deals or licensing deals, still own their masters, still own their publishing, that sort of thing. So that the nature of the business is changed a lot, and it spawned a whole world of showcase festivals now, because now there's so many more independent bands. So,
yeah, the whole world. Yeah, they are. I mean, they're all over the world. I mean, like, well, even like, you know, even in the middle of nowhere, Newfoundland now. So, you know, and that's to, also because they have so many uses, right? Like, I mean, not only are they people to gather and do business, but also they can identify a town or a city or a place, you know, culturally, and you know, bring tourism awareness to that place and stuff. So when did you start, like, did you guys do this on your own from, like, at the beginning? Like, how did you end up getting the government involved? Because if these things didn't really exist, the government would have had a hard time like, put it this way. In 2018, the government has a hard time understanding what a showcase conference is. You know, like when we went for our funding, they were like, oh yeah, well, we're not funding any festivals. And it took a lot of explaining. So what did you guys start that, like, with there? And how was the government with you guys? Like, is it city? Is it civic and federal and provincial? Like, how does that work for you guys?
We get help from all levels of government. That's for sure. And we've been around for a long time. That we've actually consulted many years ago on starting a lot of these sort of programs, and participating as you know, and sort of helping adjudicate things and of that nature. We try and stay away from anything that's a conflict of interest, but I think culture now, it used to be, you know, sort of a culture was jazz and classical. But now I think the world has sort of accepted contemporary music as culture, and, you don't have to necessarily be a world music band indigenous to your country to be recognized as culturally important. I mean, our greatest ambassadors are, I wouldn't say particularly uniquely Canadian. Certainly Drake would be, you know what I mean, probably our biggest star.
Oh, yeah. So, the most played artist on Spotify, I think.
Yeah, well, he's artist of the decade, artist of the century, you know, that kind of thing. So, but I think that Canada is because it supported culture, if you will, and bands, and not specifically, some of the programs are still rooted in different genres, but has been a great boom, and we were way ahead of the rest of the world. There's no question. I mean, there are so many people that have come to Canadian Music Week to study the model in Canada, not of us, but of the government. And that's been going on for the last 25 years, 30 years. So over the years, all these various countries have used Canada as a bit of a, you know, canary in a coal mine, testing things and planning some of their local support programs based on a variation of what we're doing. The most recent was South Africa. So South Africa, we did a spotlight in South Africa in 2019. And they sent over quite a number of their cultural ministers and sort of city folks from, you know, sort of the major cities. And they decided they wanted to do South African Music Week as a launching pad. So wow. They started that in September of last year, and it's coming again in September of this year. It was virtual because of the pandemic.
Mm.
But it was their first one, and it was the first time that the federal government there had a program to try and help these bands launch there. So, and they met with both federal and provincial and city ministers when they were here. So they were seriously going, how does it work? And, you know, how can we fast track it in South Africa?
That's incredible.
So, yeah.
I mean, to affect, you know, like you're affecting somebody in a totally different, like, continent, never mind, you know, and totally different, you know, I mean, like comparing South Africa to Canada, I mean, I don't think you can get much different. Like, it's like polarizing. Yeah. You know, they come and visit, and, you know, I mean, to do.
Yeah. So now that's building. There's an organization of 17 Southern African nations that are a trade body, and now they want to do a cultural initiative. So it looks like we'll be expanding our footprint in Africa with expanding South Africa into this larger organization, which wow. That would be fantastic. Yeah.
And are you guys taking part in that? Like, is Canadian Music Week having any part of this, or have they, did you do?
Yeah, anything? We didn't take any management or ownership role in it. We just took an advisory role. So we counseled them on how our event works and how they could duplicate it there.
Wow.
So, of course, we participated heavily in it. And the first year last year was a spotlight on Canada, naturally. So we supplied them with all the speakers. So, so it was a great start for both South Africa and Canada, you know, without missing a beat, because we went from that spotlight here, and then we did a Canadian spotlight there, and now it's going to grow into something even bigger, it looks like.
Now, well, I want to go back a little bit to the actual, you know, the festival aspect, because, like, I've witnessed, like, videos and what, you know, I've done some research on Canadian Music Week, and not only do you guys have, like, independent bands, but you also have, like, you know, top shelf artists that are playing out in street festivals usually too as well. Like in a kind of street festival style. I remember seeing Sloan, you know, a bigger Canadian band.
Yeah.
And you guys, you know, they were like, the fans were like all over the street and everything like that. So as you guys grew, like, was this to, like, is it to celebrate music itself? Because there's so many elements. Like, this is like, there's just so many different components to this, right? So, like, when you're adding the components or when you're planning this, does each of these components, like, have, like, a purposeful, like, you know, like, their own reason, or is it all connected? Like, are all the reasons connected inside of that?
Well, because of our passion about promoting Canadian music and the fact that we had a Canadian label and we were very successful internationally with it, it's always been our sort of driver to promote Canada to the world. So, and to do that, you can either take Canada to the world, which kind of gets expensive if you're shipping bands here, there, and everywhere, or you can try and bring the world to Canada to see people. It's a little more efficient. If you see particularly emerging acts, you can see them in their own environment with their own fans and get an early indication about what potential you might think they have as a buyer if you're from another country. So really that taking Canada to the world and bringing the world to Canada has been our sort of working, I don't know what you'd call it.
But mantra or something.
it's our little mission. So, okay. and that's a simplification, but that is what it is. So, and everything we do sort of funnels into that. So obviously when you have sponsors involved and you need sponsors involved to cover some of the cost of doing sort of basic things, sponsors are rarely interested in basic things. They're interested in
mega
eyeballs and, you know, people in seats and excitement and all that sort of thing. So there's a bit of pressure on delivering something on a sponsorship level that they get some sort of, you know, halo effect or impact with. Okay. But I think now with the sort of bit more sort of culturally responsible corporations, they are actually funding some of the development aspects of, you know, like we do these talent searches and for, you know, emerging acts and that sort of thing. So that's getting sponsorship attention. And we've sort of put as much sort of gloss and glamour to it as you can with new acts. I think the last version of the talent search with Jim Beam, they wanted to take it up a notch. So they said, can we make it more like a television show? Can we get some celebrities involved in some way? Wow. Is there any way that, yeah. So we did that this year. We had artists, instead of sort of industry judges, they were artists. Mentors that helped the bands, gave them sort of advice and that sort of thing. And it was done a little more, and the bands participated more as bands, not just musically, but talking to them and finding out their sort of what's driving them and what their ambitions are and that kind of thing. So we had a different feel this year, but it was quite successful. We're really, really happy with the amount of sort of attention it got, and that's these acts, of course, are not known. These acts
are indie acts, independent.
These are indie acts. Yeah. In some cases, they're right out of their basement or their garage, you know. So they got potential, and it's the potential we're trying to. I mean, it'd be nice if there was some way to groom them, but we're not in that business.
Right.
But hopefully somebody will pick these acts up and groom them, because you can see there's the star qualities is there. It's like the diamond in the rough. And that's kind of help they need from there. But anyway. We're happy just to give them that first step or that leg up.
So that talent search is like an arm of Canadian Music Week? Like, is that like...
Yeah, it has been for 20 years.
Okay, and
it's one way that our festival. It was a way to work with our radio partners and our national partners was to do, you know, club shows and playdowns in different cities across Canada to sort of narrow down the list of bands we would invite.
Okay.
I mean, this is before there was provincial recording industry associations.
Wow.
You know, so you had to do something because there was nothing, there was no organization whatsoever out there, if you will. So we just created it ourselves.
And you go ahead.
No, it's just it's still to this day is, you know, to me, I still get a big kick out of, you know, hearing new talent, discovering new talent, and then putting them on a stage and giving them a launching pad. Mm-hmm. So it's almost as exciting as having the indie label. The indie label, I must say, you could see things from inception to completion, which was great. You know what I mean? As long as they didn't leave your label.
Right. Yeah. To keep them towed in, right?
Yeah. But I mean, we got to travel around the world a lot with our artists. So, I mean, it was an amazing time in my life. So, you know.
Were you, were those artists at that time, were you like, what artists were they? Like, why don't we share that? Like,
well, the artist said, we're also a management company at the same time.
Okay.
So that sort of model when, I guess in the 2000s, when things started to change and there was lots of sort of piracy and, you know, people were talking about changing the model and record companies were going to get into booking and management because there wasn't enough money in the record sales anymore, that kind of thing. Well, when we started, we had everything because there wasn't enough money. When you start with an act that's making, you know, $100 a night, it doesn't go very far between five guys in a management company. So, you know, so that's, we shared in everything. So we were publishers, we were the record label, we were management. Sounds like a huge conflict of interest, but we had contracts for everything. And, you know, outside lawyers to advise the clients. So, and some of the management clients ended up on our label. And a lot of them ended up on our label because we couldn't get them deals with major companies. Because we first tried to get major labels to put money into them first before we dug into our own pockets. But and back then, there was not a lot of funding to help these bands to do it. I mean, somebody had to put up the money. It was either family, friends, band, or management. You know what I mean? That's how it sort of started. But Triumph was our... one of our first bands we discovered before they were Triumph, if you will. And we managed them. At a certain point, we lost them, but we managed them. We broke them in the States. They were starting to break worldwide. And we're still very, very tight with those guys today. That was one. But on that label was Chilliwack,
okay.
Good Brothers, a band called Toronto. I don't know if you remember them.
Yeah, yeah.
Headpins.
Okay.
From Vancouver, yeah.
These are not small bands. These are like Canadian legendary bands.
No, they're all multi-platinum.
Yeah, these are legendary
bands. All the stuff behind me here is all solid gold records.
Okay.
There's two rooms of them. There's everywhere down in his office is sort of a tribute to solid gold right here. Right. Anyway, yeah, no, these were big bands and they were international bands at that time. And so we pioneered a lot of that. Wow. So we had the, you know, certainly I had the sort of history and knowledge to bring that to an event to try and help a wider group of people, not only bands and managers, but agents and promoters and, you know, song pluggers and, you know, music supervisors. And there's a whole world of people out there that, and the ecosystem that now we can help and work with. So it's, there's a lot of satisfaction in doing it. So, yeah.
And you didn't just stop at Canadian Music Week either. Like you, there's other things going, like, not only is Canadian Music Week so multi-diverse with like all the different aspects of it, but you also have another organization called CAMA. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so that comes strictly out of working with the bands. And it's an artist-driven organization, and it's basically everything we do in there is sort of, we run it up the flagpole with the members or the artists that are involved. So it is a, it's an artist-centric organization that is keeping them sort of blinkers on, focused on where they're going and what programs would work and what they'd like to see us do. As promoters, I mean, like I say, we get involved with sponsors and different things. So there's a lot of different agendas happening. But with the artists, they're pretty clear on what they want. So we use them as a sounding board for the speakers we bring in, the topics that we discuss at the conference, the countries that we spotlight, because what we do is we do quite an in-depth research on every country when we start working with new countries. And quite often there is no guide or directory or anything into these countries. South Africa's a really good example, is they had promoters and they had no industry. You know what I mean? There was no central source. They had a few associations. So we did our own sort of overview of the market, again, made that available to CAMA members. So they get access to people's phone numbers, people's emails, and a paragraph or two about what these people do. We don't get out there and book them. We do try and help them, connect them, and be a connector to the people that can help them in these different countries.
So CAMA is like, it's a subscriber base. Like, if you're a musician, do you join it then?
Yeah, you can join it. Anybody can join it, but everybody that plays in the festival, that application and all the sort of administration is done by CAMA, and your fee to join, which is really a nominal fee for admin, is also your application and your fee to be in CAMA for 2 years.
Wow.
And
okay.
You can renew if you're enjoying it, you can renew, or every time you play Music Week and a lot of bands come back, they just continue on being repeated in there. So it's changing, but it's changing slowly. And the people that are in there know about Canadian Music Week. They played Canadian Music Week. You know what I mean? They've experienced it. They know what they like and they don't like. It's better than bringing somebody from the outside to get advice, because these people have lived it.
Right. So. And so I guess what I'm pointing at now is like, is it only for Canadians, or can anybody join CAMA?
Anybody can join CAMA, but all the sort of the directors are Canadian. Okay. And it's primarily Canadian. We're not we're not trying to help US bands or British bands or something, but, and we showcase those bands as well. So, I mean, because going back again to my record days, trade's reciprocal. Like you've got to, it's like, if I do something for you, hopefully you'll do something for me. And you know what I mean? So here I am in Canada. I can help your band here in Canada. Maybe you can help my band in Taiwan. So that kind of thing. So early on, we everything we did was we would develop really good relationships with people in different territories, and we would rely on them for help. So yeah, so Tama is basically playing on that in a way that trade is reciprocal. So we reach out to these different countries. We've kept up with our connections with all the key people. So again, we're just a big resource, and basically it's free.
And going back to Canadian Music Week, like when did you guys start doing these like focus countries? Because that's super interesting where you're like, you got like a massive amount of information, a massive of the industry, country.
We always had, we always did international, but putting focus on countries and really going in depth and then inviting missions from that country to come into Canada, it probably started around the 20 years mark, but it got very heavy in the last 15 years.
Can you guess how many countries you've done at this point?
They're all on the Tama website.
Okay. Yeah,
they're like, there's at least 15, we can tell you that.
Wow.
But we started off, we didn't just sort of go, let's do the States because they're right next to us. I remember we did China right out of the box before anybody had been to China.
Right.
Nobody was talking about China. It was like going there and learning the market and meeting the people. Man, that was something.
Like, that must have been alien, really. I mean, because you're talking about like what year would have been, like in the early 2000s, right?
Early 2000s.
Yeah. That would have been a different place than it is now.
Oh, it's totally, totally different. Well, the only thing that hasn't changed is pollution. It's still the same.
Yeah.
You couldn't see your hand in front of your face in Beijing. It's like, what?
Oh my God! Yeah.
it's like the fog in London. It was so thick.
And to do these focuses is to kind of put a spotlight on their industry, so people that come to Canadian Music, we can learn all about that specific country. Then is that what?
Yes, that is exactly right. So and they get to meet the key players. Or some of the key players, I would say. I mean, we couldn't bring them all in. We bring in, you know, maybe 15 or 20.
That's a lot of people.
It is a lot.
Yeah.
And we would work with the two governments, and hopefully that this is again where we're saying things are reciprocal. They're coming to Canada to see Canada as a market, and we're bringing them to Canada as buyers because we want to give our bands a chance to
the opportunity to
work there or sell their products there. So that's sort of how it works. It becomes down to it's up to the managers and labels to take advantage of this. And obviously multinationals have setups around the world, they're not as interested in that as the independents are. So this was really, again, independent driven, and it's given bands, like I've been in many countries, many Canadian bands now, you know, that they never would have got the chance if it wasn't for all this legwork that was done to set it up and get them there, you know?
Well, no kidding. And I mean, not only that, not only are you opening the doors like all over the world and giving the insight, you know, like, cause that's what I see. The major part is like, not only is it like a focus, but like you learn so much about that country, you get to interact with people from that country. It's a great service, but you guys are also like ambassadors for Canada as well, right? Like when you're going into these places, like you're actually not just representing a company, you're like representing a country. I mean, it, right. You know, in every sense of the form, like maybe it's not about, you know, political ties or whatever, but I mean, it sure can lead to that if the friendships become better or whatever. Sure. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, the opportunities are huge, and, you know, we kind of feel like we're doing a job that needs to be done. That's how it started. That's how it's developed. And that's how it goes.
What's your favorite part about a showcase conference? Like, do you have particular favorite parts, or, I mean, do you enjoy a number of things more than other number of things? Like, how about for yourself after? Because I mean, now you're like, you know, grandfathering this, you know, this in the industry yeah. in a almost literal sense. So, I mean, tell me about that. Like, what components?
Well, again, it's like raising children. It's great to see people grow and succeed, whether they're in business or they're a musician. You know, we're there to support them all. So I get my biggest satisfaction out of being a connector and, you know, helping people realize some of their dreams. So to me, there's not a tremendous amount of money in it, but there's, and you know, we have other businesses, but we this is probably the most enjoyable for me as you know, getting satisfaction out of doing something.
Okay. And you guys also, so you have CAMA going on, you have Canadian Music Week going on. And you also, there's also like a, like, okay, in Canada, cannabis is legal. Marijuana is legal. So tell me, and you guys have a conference about that as well. Can you tell me a little bit about
that? Yeah, we do. We were the very first conference. And we've got two conferences, actually. We have a business conference called O'Cannabiz. And we have a horticultural conference called Grow Up. So both sides of the business are covered, and we started them before legalization was here. We knew it was coming, but we knew there would be an industry built on it, and we wanted to get in there first. So we were basically first. So So that's still going now. COVID kind of threw a wrench into that. There hasn't been a conference since 2019. So the first one's coming up in October. So that is, So
and that'll be local. Does it operate?
Yeah, it's going to be
the same. I was going to ask, like, is there any elements that are kind of similar?
That are similar?
Music? Yeah, to the music conference?
Well, logistically, you're dealing with production, speakers, venue, that kind of thing. So that's in common, but that's in common with any industry that puts on a conference or an exhibition. Other than that, no.
Okay.
No, it's a complete.
So there's no like rock bands, like, you know, Cheech and Chong guys, like.
Well, I wouldn't say that. No, there's them. No, we've had some celebrities.
Okay.
Sure. We're not crazy. Wherever there's a connection, we're using it. So, with Tommy Chong and who else have we had? We've had a number of different artists up, but they're not the main attraction. I mean, these people are interested in doing B2B business. Okay. So B2B business is always, if you're not doing the business, then there's no reason to exist. You're not there to party. I mean, you are there to party, but that's after.
Right.
So, it's really the business that drives everything. And it's the same in the music thing too. We like to have some results and track some successes out of these things. So, you know, it's a lot of work to put it together if it was just a party.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to actually imagine, like, how big is the team that works on Canadian Music Week? Like, are you employing like a sector, let's say, you know, when it comes around every year? I mean, like, what's that? I mean, it must take a year to plan the thing. First of all, it's so.
It does. The team is very small, but it's like you say, it expands. So 6 months out, there's some people added. 3 months out, there's a lot of people added. And then for the event, of course, there's hundreds. So, it sort of does a bell curve. And then after that, it drops off again. So, and that was another reason we decided to do some other shows, because we didn't want to over saturate the market. In other words, coming in up once a year is probably annually is about right. But to keep some of the core people employed, we need to have other things for them to do at other times of the year. So that was another reason to start other businesses. So that's sort of the rationale of that. Because good people, they're hard to find. And of course, if you only hire them on a contract for a certain period of time, they may or may not be available next year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of freelancers now. Unfortunately, a lot of them got really badly hurt in the pandemic. And I'm not sure, you know, what the sort of employment level is going to be like as it creeps back. But there was a tremendous amount of freelancers out there that could actually work from, you know, event to event to event to event. They were at a different event every weekend, you know? So, and hopefully it'll grow back to that again, because that employed a lot of people.
So this must have a major economic impact on Toronto, the city itself, when you guys run, because I mean, people are coming from all over the world.
We measured that for many years. Yeah. There's sort of the kind of things they're looking at are the number of hotel rooms that people take. How far are they traveling? You know, how long are they in the city? Are they eating in restaurants? Are they shopping? You know what I mean? So the tourist board has a sort of a way to sort of figure out, judging on the number of people that are attending, on approximately what they're spending on accommodation, food, etc. And who knows what else they do while they're here, because just about everybody goes to a baseball game or a hockey game or something. You know what I mean? They're not just going out to the music shows every night of the week. So, and that's quite a significant amount of money. So that bounces around like $15 million to $20 million annually.
Wow. I knew it would be something crazy like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the amount of people and they're coming and spending. And so, Neil, let me take you back into the music industry here. Like, you know, you were in the heyday, like in the 80s, the music industry really was like the heyday kind of thing. And you fostered some of the, you know, like we were saying, some of the most legendary Canadian acts. So, you know, you've been in the industry, you've been around the industry, you know, all kinds of industry people. You're at the head of like one of the, you know, one of the most premier showcases in the world, like in Canada and in the world. How do you see the music industry continuing in the next 10 years? Do you think anything is going to drastically change? Do you think there's going to be any kind of new trends? Do you think that, you know, music, live music industry is going to be in a safe place? Do you think it's going to decline? Give me some of your thoughts about just the general, your general thoughts about the music industry moving into the future.
Well, I can only base it on the fact that I've lived through a lot of ups and downs in the music industry and a lot of challenges that technology brought to the music industry. Now, as it turns out, I think we're in a new golden age. I mean, there's more money being made now than there was. I mean, back in the old days, yeah, it's different. It's not records, but certainly streaming has replaced that income. And it's made a lot of people that, it's made a lot of people that are very successful, very wealthy. So they may not have been as wealthy as if 20 years ago, if they were signed to a major label. I don't think they would have accumulated that kind of, the kind of wealth they're doing now.
Very interesting.
Some of these artists, some of these artists now, I mean, it's certainly the right time in history to be an artist because there's a lot more things going for you. And I think as artists keep getting more and more sort of educated and the more they lobby with government, the better it's going to be for them in the future, because politicians are sympathetic to artists where they're not necessarily sympathetic to major companies. So, you know, so I think that, and there's still a lot of things that need to be changed, because when you look at the sort of breakdown of royalties that the artist or the writer makes compared to the label or the publisher, it's a fraction.
Well, and Spotify.
And you,
Spotify,
you wonder. Yeah. So it's, so when you're, that's right. So the, yeah, or the ESP, the, whatever they're, when you think that those, that art is being created by somebody, but they're not making the lion's share of the money. They're making a fraction of the lion's share for the money. So I think that will, I think that equilibrium will start to go towards the artist in the future. I think people will be, and it's easier for the artist to build their own audience and direct, deal directly with their own fans now. Mm-hmm. That wasn't possible before. I mean, we, I mean, our challenge when it was all vinyl and we were selling records, well, we got into the CDs as well, but when we first started, it was all vinyl. So that, you didn't know who your customer was. I mean, you'd have to have people in, on Young Street in front of Sam the Record Man to sort of do exit polls to find out who these people were, and you know what I mean? Because you didn't, yeah. you didn't get, there was no internet. There was no way to get their address or name or, you know what I mean?
Email address.
No such thing.
Yeah.
You have to have a stamp and an envelope. Yeah. So I'm just saying it's a bigger world. There's more competition, but it's also a way better place for the creatives than it used to be.
That's a great, you know, it's really great to hear you say that, because there is such a, I don't know why, but it just seems like there is such a kind of a negativity. I mean, of course, after COVID, people are very excited to get back to work and back to business and see live shows. But before COVID, it just seemed like a lot of people are really pessimistic, and it's hard to understand why they would be pessimistic, because like you're saying, like with all this technology, there's just so many places to exist. And there's so many ways that you can interact with the people that, you know, are going to like your music, or, you know, that want to, you know, see or hear what you're doing. So let me ask you this now. We'll wrap this up right away. I really appreciate you spending the time with me.
My pleasure.
What are some of the biggest challenges you face coming into the future, like with Canadian Music Week? Do you see anything in the horizon that actually is going to get more exciting, or do you see anything in horizon that might be actually challenging for you guys?
Well, coming out of COVID's challenging. There's no question about that. And the uncertainty, I'm excited about the fact I can go out to a restaurant now, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, it's incremental, and we don't know how fast things are going to happen, because just when you think that the vaccinations are going to work, then you hear about all these new variants and all these new lockdowns in different countries around the world, and you're wondering. And then when you look at the amount of unvaccinated people in the world, and it's usually because they're in third world countries, you're going to think, how's this ever going to get conquered unless everybody bands together and gives away this stuff, vaccinate the world? But because this stuff will just keep, you know, going
multiplying
in cycles.
Yeah.
And particularly new variants, it's like the flu, it'll come out every year. So, so I'm not sure how fast things will get back to normal, you know what I mean? And even the new normal, I don't know what that'll be either. So, I mean, that's my biggest challenge, is trying to make hard decisions on that. But I can tell you the reason we're hedging our bet and going one foot in person to person and one foot in hybrid into virtual is exactly that, just in case things are not working out 100% like they should, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think if the money was there and we could just sit on the sidelines forever, I would definitely wait till the end of 22 to see what happened, but we can't do that. So we're just going for it in May of 2022 or June. And, damn the torpedoes kind of thing.
We're going for it. All out war.
We're going for it.
Charge.
We're not going for it in a crazy way. I mean, we'd never jeopardize anybody's health. We would just sort of size it and work it so we can get back in the live business. But at the same time, if internationals can't come here, then we would put something on for them.
Mm-hmm.
But make it interactive. So yeah, anyway, that's the plan. And like I say, we were exceptionally pleased with the virtual, because we never done anything of that nature before, but now I feel like we're, you know, it's like going up in that space rocket the other day. I'm ready for that now.
Yeah, it is. And it's so weird that the virtual element is so powerful, and it connects people. And, you know, I mean, there's so much to do on that as well. Will you move ahead always with a virtual component, like into the future, even after?
Well, I would think there'll always be a piece of virtual in there, because the convenience. I mean, if you think about what happened just in society, there was always teleconferencing available. Mm. So if you were a big major company, the boardroom would have a camera, and your sort of subsidiary in Montreal would have a camera in their boardroom, and people would go back and forth. It wasn't, other than, Facebook and that type of thing, people weren't doing as much conferencing as what happened in this pandemic. So this pandemic basically made Zoom a household word, and everybody was on Zoom calls. And it was amazing that fulfilled the gap, and the function of it worked well enough that you didn't have to miss a beat. You could talk to your employees, you could talk to your clients, you could talk to your sponsors, you know what I mean? And it was, to me, it was a lifesaver for business. And it was also a lifesaver for people just to connect with family and everything else. So otherwise, people would have been totally isolated. It would have been, you know. So what that's done is just made that in the past we had done live over Skype, if you can remember Skype.
Yeah.
So live over Skype interviews, but they were always dodgy in the event because some people couldn't travel, if they were artists and they had drug charges, they couldn't get across the border, but that didn't stop us wanting to interview them. Mm. So it had its purpose back then, and people put up with it. But I think now people don't mind it. So if there's the odd speaker that pops in from Australia or China or India or wherever, and they can't make it personally, but they're there on the screen and you can interact with them and ask questions. I think that is an element that the conference going public will accept now as, I get it, you know?
The norm.
It's okay. It's not, you know what I mean? And the, every day, the quality and the sort of, sort of the glitches get less and less. So I just think it'll get better and better and better.
More eyes. Because if you're live and then people are going to the event and also they can tune in online. I mean, it's just, you're giving more opportunity for more people to be taking part in it as well.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah.
So it just gets bigger and bigger and better and, you know, in every single way. So, I mean, that's absolutely exciting for sure. So so you guys are going to happen the first week of June. And what do you know which countries you're going to be focusing on in 2022?
What happened was in 2020, we were supposed to do Poland as the lead country.
Oh, okay.
And of course, COVID killed all that.
Yeah.
So Poland weren't ready because we said, okay, we're going to do a virtual thing and would like to, you know, get you guys back. So they came back with a showcase. And some, you know, people in the conference, but we didn't do a complete number, if you know what I mean, on them. Mm. So they wanted to wait till 2022 when they thought their industry was back because they were devastated as well. So Poland is definitely going to be on the list. It'll also be, I believe, a couple of the countries that you were involved in when, I think, is it Japan and South Korea? And we'll be doing at least two more countries next year. So there'll be a couple South Asian countries and Poland next year. And then beyond that, I don't know, but that's...
That's super interesting. You know, you mix it up like that too. I mean, like, that's super awesome, man. Like to have like, you know, some like a Eastern, Northern Europe and then Eastern Asia, you know, kind of thing. That's it's wide and it's, I mean, that's so global as well. Right. I mean, well, Canada is like kind of like a global country in a way. It's a global village.
We are.
Yeah.
And we're so multinational and
we're everybody. Well, thanks a lot, Neil. It was a really good conversation. I got a lot of information and, you know, I got to know you better too. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
So thanks so much for that.
Okay. Well, thank you, Evan. It was great to be with you.
Okay. Take care, Neil.
All right. Cheers.
Okay. Bye for now.